Hi, so to our speaker, Gil McGowan. Gil is the president of the Alberta Federation of Labour. He's also a member of the, CEP, the Chemical, Energy and Paper Workers Union, Communications Union, sorry. And he also is a graduate of the Carleton School of Journalism. And just very, very quickly, one of the little stories he gave us was, is Mr. Gogo in the room? Mr. Gogo was Minister of Education at that time, and it's the difficulty of reconciling being a social activist and union member and being with the media, where you have to be neutral, as we all know. And there he was in a scrum with Mr. Gogo, where there are hundreds of people in Edmonton shouting the obvious, go, 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 of course. And suddenly, of course, it gets into his blood, and there he is with his sort of microphone, go, 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 go. Wait a minute, you know, everyone's looking at me. And so this is the sort of guy we have here today, but he's going to talk about Medicare. He's got a lot of experience in rallies and on the policy issues regarding some of the predecessors to this, the Bill 11 and various other things. So please, Gil, come up and address us.
Thank you very much. The attention of the media and the public in this province has been firmly focused on our premier this week. As the Tories gather in Calgary for their annual convention, almost everyone is asking, will he stay or will he go? This afternoon, I'd also like to talk about Ralph Klein. But instead of focusing on either his leadership or his plans for retirement, I'd like to focus on his latest policy priorities. In particular, I'd like to talk about our Premier's plans for the so-called third way in healthcare. We've all seen and heard the news. Premier Klein has been telling us that the sky is falling. He's been telling us that we can no longer afford Medicare. And he's been telling us that privatization is at least part of the solution. In many ways, this is one of the most important political debates that we've ever had in this province. The very future of our health and the health for our children is at stake. With that in mind, over the next 20 minutes or so, I'd like to do four things. First, I'll talk about what's actually being proposed when the government talks about the third way. Second, I'll talk about why we in the labor movement think that at least some of these proposals are taking us down a very dangerous path. Third, I'll talk about how these proposals, if implemented, might affect individuals, businesses, and the economy. And finally, I'll talk about what I think individual Albertans, like everyone in this room, can and should do to protect Medicare. So what is the third way? For several years now, Premier Klein has been promising something big. He has even suggested that he's willing to violate the Canada Health Act. Until now, it's just been talk, disturbing talk, but just talk. But he's finally moved from rhetoric to action. At the end of February, the Premier and his Health Minister, Iris Evans, released something that they call the Health Policy Framework. It's not legislation. It's really just a skeleton of ideas. But the government has made it clear that this document will form the basis of new legislation that we could see as early as the middle of April. It's the first time that they've actually spelled out in clear language what the third way will involve. In a sense, they've finally put their cards on the table, and that's a positive thing. The other positive thing is that there are actually a number of policy directions that's contained in the framework that almost everyone involved in the healthcare debate can agree on. It's no secret that we in the labor movement are big defenders of Medicare. We helped create it, and we still think it's worth fighting for. But even we can't take issue with some of the proposals in the framework. So, for example, we support the suggestion included in the document that there should be more teamwork between health professionals. We support the suggestion that there should be some experiments with replacing the fee-for-service approach to paying doctors with salaries. And we support the suggestion that there should be greater emphasis on wellness and prevention. If these kind of reforms were the sum total of the framework, I probably wouldn't be here today. And the government probably wouldn't be facing a rising tide of public opposition. Unfortunately, the good in the document is far outweighed by the bad and what I would describe as the downright dangerous. In fact, I would go so far as to say, as if the government proceeds with these proposals, it will be the beginning of the end of Medicare as we know it, at least in Alberta and probably across the country. Like many of the groups and individuals who have voiced opposition to the third way, we at the Federation of Labour are particularly concerned about four policy directions that are outlined in the framework. First, we're concerned about plans to remove the prohibition on doctors working in both the public and private system. Second, we're concerned about plans to allow patients to buy their way to the front of the line, at least for certain services. Third, we're concerned by the suggestion that some services may be delisted or that some new services may never be listed at all. And fourth, we're particularly concerned about the plans to open the door for private health insurance. Despite repeated reassurances by people like Iris Evans and Ralph Klein, these are not mild reforms. This is not tinkering around the edges. For the better part of a decade now, conservative governments like ours here in Alberta have been chipping away at our public health care system. We've seen contracting out of ancillary services. We've seen delisting of things like vision care and physiotherapy. And here in Alberta and in provinces like Quebec and BC, we've seen strong moves towards the increased presence of for-profit delivery within the public system. But let's be clear about one thing. If the Klein government goes ahead with the plans contained in the framework document, the plans that make up the third way, and in particular, if they allow people to buy their way to the front of the line for certain services, and if they open the door for private health insurance, then they will be going one giant step farther and beyond where anyone else in the country has gone before. They will be going from private delivery to private payment. They will be going from access based on need to access based on wealth. They will be introducing a gold-plated tier of care for a few and an inferior public tier for the rest of us. And that doesn't just violate the letter and the spirit of the Canada Health Act. It strikes at the very foundations of Medicare. Now, before I dive into my specific critiques of the framework, I'd like to step back and take a closer look at the government's goals and assumptions. Because in the same way that buildings are constructed on foundations, public policies are built on the foundation of assumptions. Now, if the foundations of a building are weak, the structure is shaky. And if the government's goals and assumptions are faulty, the public policies that flow from them will be weak as well. In many ways, the problems with the third way are not necessarily with the government's goals. Both Health Minister Iris Evans and the Premier have said that their primary goals with these reforms are to control costs and reduce waiting lists. Now, frankly, who can argue with that? But while it may be hard to take issue with some of the government's overarching goals, the same cannot be said for the assumptions that their plan is built on. To put it bluntly, many of their core assumptions are flawed, and that's where the third way starts to come off the rails. The first assumption that I'd like to take issue with is the assumption that public health care is not financially sustainable. People in the government have sometimes accused people like me and maybe other people in this room of fear-mongering on various issues. But on the issue of health care sustainability, it is the government that's running around saying that the sky is falling. The truth about health care spending in Alberta is both more complex and also less alarming than what the government lets on. When I met with Iris Evans earlier this week, she said breathlessly, and this is a quote from her, she said, when Premier Klein took power, we were spending about $5 billion on health care, and now we're spending $10 billion. Now, that sounds very dramatic, and obviously it convinced her, but what this told me was not that health care spending is unsustainable, but rather that the minister doesn't really have a good grasp of economics. The truth is that over the 13-year period that the minister referred to, is that inflation in Alberta has increased by nearly 30%, and our provincial population has grown by more than 500,000. We also have to remember that in the mid-1990s, the government imposed deep cuts on health services and staffing, creating a substantial need for catch-up spending. When you look past the doom and gloom being pushed by certain politicians, what we find is that when you adjust for inflation and population growth, real per capita spending on healthcare in Alberta has actually been growing at an average of less than 2% over the past 13 years. since Ralph Klein took power. That's the crisis. That's what the government is using to justify throwing the baby out with the bathwater. Less than 2%. And it doesn't stop there. You can't say you really understand trends in health spending until you break down that spending into its component parts, until you put it in the context of our overall provincial income. When you do that, what you see is that spending on hospitals and doctors, which forms the core of Medicare, has actually remained almost entirely flat over the past 15 years. You also see that the areas of the highest cost increases are actually the ones with the biggest for-profit component, most notably prescription drugs. And then there's the question of what we can afford. Thanks largely to a lucky accident of geology and geography, we're the richest province in the country, and we're getting richer. As a percentage of our provincial GDP, which is our collective income, public spending on healthcare has remained stable at under 6% for the past 20 years. The bottom line in healthcare spending is that the sky is not falling. It's affordable. Our system is affordable. It's manageable, especially in a province as wealthy as Alberta. That leads me to my second, and I would argue even more, dangerous assumption that almost all of the government's third wave proposals are built on. And that's the assumption that privatization is one of the best ways to achieve their goals on cost control and shortened waiting lists. On the day the framework document was released, I told reporters it read like a love letter for private healthcare. That's because privatization was the strand that wound through the entire document and tied it together. It was the magic pill, the silver bullet. But the assumption that greater privatization will lead to lower costs and reduced waiting lists is just that, an assumption. And all the available research and all the available evidence from the real world suggests that it's a false assumption. Take the proposal to allow doctors to work both sides of the street, for example. The framework suggests that by allowing doctors to take paying patients, that this will somehow reduce pressure on the public system. They talk about a safety valve. Now, it's a nice-sounding theory, but experience shows that it doesn't work in practice. It doesn't work because there are only a limited number of doctors, and if they're working 2 days a week in their for-profit practice, that's 2 days a week that they're not available to work in the public practice. And the result is longer waiting lists in the public system, not shorter. And this isn't hypothetical. These kind of reforms have been tried in Britain, Australia, and other countries. And to put it bluntly, the experiments have failed. They haven't taken the pressure off the public system. On the contrary, experience shows that doctors consistently choose their higher-paying private clients and leave the public patients waiting longer in public lines. But allowing doctors to work both sides of the street is only one piece of the third-way puzzle. The government is also talking about allowing people to buy their way to the front of the line for certain services like hips and knee replacements. They're talking about shrinking the umbrella of what's covered by Medicare by either delisting services or not listing new services. When I look at all these proposals together, what I see is a deliberate attempt on the part of the Alberta government to create a market for private health care and private health insurance where there was no market before. By shrinking the Medicare umbrella and allowing people to pay privately for things like joint replacement, they're creating the demand. And by freeing doctors to give faster access to those with thick wallets, they're creating the supply. The big question is this. Are these changes really in the best interest of Albertans? Will the creation of a market in private health care and private health insurance save us money? Will it improve access to care? Will it benefit our economy and serve our families better? From our perspective at the Federation of Labour, the short answer to those questions is an emphatic no. Private health care is not in our best interest. As I said, the biggest danger of the third way is that they're opening the door for and creating a market for private health insurance. When I met Iris Evans, I gave her a list of reasons why a move towards a greater reliance on private health insurance would not be in the public interest. And I'd like to share five or six of those reasons with you today. So first, an increased reliance on private health insurance would not be in the public interest because, simply put, it costs more. Our single-payer public system, which we currently have, pools risk, thereby reducing costs. Our public health insurance system also has very low administrative costs. Only about 2% of overall costs go to administration versus about 13% to administration south of the border. Okay? This explains why the American system, which relies on private insurance, is roughly twice as expensive on a per capita basis when compared to the Canadian system. Introducing a new tier of private insurance here in Alberta would undermine the advantage of having a single-payer system. It would fragment our system, reduce efficiencies, and increase overall cost. Second, an increased reliance on private health insurance would not be in the public interest because private health care has a much worse track record on cost containment than public care. Costs in the public sector have been going up, but not nearly as much as costs for profit health care. In the U.S., which is like a petri dish for private health care, private health insurance premiums have been rising at an average rate of more than 10% a year for each of the past 7 years. These increases have been even higher for smaller employers. In fact, the only way that private insurers have been able to stop costs from completely spiraling out of control south of the border is by denying more people coverage, reducing the scope of coverage for those who are enrolled in plans by charging ever-increasing deductibles and co-payments. Third, an increased reliance on private health insurance would not be in the public interest because the companies most likely to step forward to provide these expanded private health insurance services, the companies who are most likely to step in to fill this gap are the same American companies that have been found guilty of fraud on an almost mind-boggling scale. I could give you a long list. In fact, it would probably take me half an hour to go through the list, but I'll give you a few examples. Columbia HCA was fined $740 million for fraud. Tenet Healthcare was fined $683 million for fraud. Even Aon, which is the private insurance company that our government has contracted to help draft their framework document, was fined $190 million for fraud. Are these the people that we want to be our saviors in healthcare? Are these really the people that we want to invite into Alberta to provide service for our families? Fourth, an increased reliance on private health insurance would not be in the public interest because it costs more, because the expansion of private health insurance will hurt Alberta employers. Now, this may seem strange coming from a labor person to be concerned about the business, but at the end of the day, our workers, rely on businesses being viable, right? So if the government shrinks the Medicare umbrella, workers, both union and non-union, will have no choice but to push for increased health benefits from their employers to fill the gap. And employers, especially in Alberta's current tight job market, will have little choice but to comply in order to attract and retain employees. For public sector employers, this will mean having less money at the end of the day to pay for the services that they provide, whether it be healthcare, education, whatever. And for private sector employers, it means reduced profits. To understand just how costly the third way might be to employers, consider these numbers. The average cost for health benefits in Canada is currently about $930 U.S. per employee per year. In the States, the average cost is $5,500 U.S. for single employees and more than $10,000 for employees with families. So 10 times what we pay. These costs have been literally eating American businesses alive. The bottom line is that Medicare, as it is currently constituted, lowers costs for our business and gives them a huge economic advantage when competing with their American rivals. Creating a new tier of private health insurance in Alberta will substantially reduce the advantage that Medicare confers on our businesses. A move to a greater reliance on private health insurance will be particularly problematic for smaller businesses because large employers will more easily be able to afford expanded health benefits. In the current tight job market, that means that smaller employers will have an even harder time, an even greater disadvantage when it comes to attracting and retaining employees. Fifth, an increased reliance on private health insurance would not be in the public interest because less than 35% of Alberta workers currently have access to supplemental health benefits through work. 35%. These are the people most likely to receive increased benefits to cover a new tier of private service that the third way would create. Everyone else, the 65% of the workforce, would have to make do with a second-class public system. Even if you add on the families of the workers covered by private insurance currently in Alberta, we're only talking about 50% of the Alberta population, okay? And the rest will be left without supplemental health insurance. Sixth and finally, an increased reliance on private health insurance would not be in the public interest because there is only, at the end of the day, there's only one payer for health services, the individual citizen. By opening the door for more private health insurance, the government won't be reducing costs. In fact, they'll probably be increasing them because private health insurance costs more. So they won't be reducing costs, they'll just be transferring them. They'll be downloading them onto business and onto individuals. And I ask this question, shouldn't the government consider the broader social cost of health care rather than just focusing on getting health care costs off their books? At this point, I'd like to make one thing very clear. We in the labor movement do not want to bargain for increased health insurance coverage. We don't want to add an extra burden on our employers, and we don't want to have to deal with another item at the bargaining table that could cause tension and possibly lead towards strikes. And that's the reality. The biggest bargaining table issue in the state is not wages, it's health care. Our strong preference is to maintain a comprehensive and universal public system. But make no mistake, if the government starts shrinking the Medicare umbrella, we will have no choice but to act. We will have no choice but attempt to fill the gap at the bargaining table. With all sincerity, I hope it never comes to that. It won't be good for our members, it won't be good for business, and it won't be good for Alberta. I am, as a labor activist, I'm fiercely proud of the fact that the Canadian labor movement has always fought for health care benefits for all Canadians, not just its members. And that will continue to be our internal priority and our political priority. But if the government proceeds with the third way as currently proposed, they're opening a Pandora's box. As it stands right now, Alberta employers cover extended health benefits for about 582,000 individual Alberta workers. If you add a new tier of care, that's a good indication of how many people will be demanding more private coverage from their employers. And of course, you know, other than hips and knees, we don't know exactly which services the government plans to let people have faster access to, so we don't know exactly how many new benefits we might have to bargain for or how much those benefits might cost. But for each item that they add to the list, the cost to employers to cover the gap will go up. One way to estimate what the cost might actually look like is to look at the monthly cost being projected by Acure Health, which is a private health insurance firm associated with Jim Dinning. They're planning to offer a plan that will cover access to services like hip and knee replacements at a cost of $70 a month. So imagine this. If all 582,000 Alberta workers who are currently covered by extended health benefits are successful in getting that kind of coverage, the extra $70 a month, that would translate into an extra cost of $41 million a month for Alberta employers and more than $492 million a year. And that's for just one procedure. Well, two, hips and knees. At the end of the day, I'm left with many troubling questions about this framework document. For example, why would the government want to down so many and such significant costs onto business and individuals? Why, if they talk about the Alberta advantage, this would be creating an Alberta disadvantage. Why would they want to undermine the economic advantage conferred by Medicare? How, if their goal is cost control, are they going to do that by opening the door for private insurance, which we know from experience is more expensive? And if their goal is to reduce waiting lists, how are they going to accomplish that by letting doctors work both sides of the street, a practice which we know will probably lead to longer waits in the public system, not shorter? I know that the buzzword for the government is choice. That's what this is all about. They say that people should be free to choose where to spend their money, even if they're spending it on health services. Now, in democratic Western societies, we've always tried to protect individual rights and individual choice, and that's a good thing. But we've also said that reasonable limits need to be placed on choice, especially when an individual's choice might have adverse effects on the choices and the lifestyle of others. That's why we say that people don't have the right to choose to drive down the highway at 200 kilometers an hour, or they don't have the right to smack their neighbor in the head if they have an argument. Okay? We put reasonable limits on choice. Given that private health insurance drives up costs and has the potential to increase waiting lists for health care for everyone, I would argue that it's reasonable to prohibit access to it. It's a clear example of the public good trumping the narrow interests of wealthy individuals. The majority of Canadians and Albertans understand this. It's just too bad that whoever wrote the government's framework document didn't share that insight. And in conclusion, I'd just like to say this. Private health care and the third way may be Ralph's hobby horse, but Albertans don't have to hop on board. All the evidence shows that privatization is the wrong way to go. The evidence also shows that many potentially fruitful avenues for reform exist within the public system. In fact, and this is the big irony, Alberta has actually been a trailblazer in terms of reform within the public system. We've all heard about the hip and knee project that had reduced average waiting lists for hip and knee replacements from 10 months to 10 weeks, all without resorting to private health or private health insurance. It's those kind of reforms, the ones that we're actually working on within our own public system, that represent the way forward. The bad news is that our premier seems determined to proceed. And there's nothing more dangerous than a politician with a bad idea who knows he's not going to face the voters again. The good news is that while Ralph may be riding off into the sunset, the majority of his caucus members are not. They will face the voters again. And that's where all of you come in. We have to send a message to the Tory MLAs around the province, but especially for the crowd here, especially here in Lethbridge and surrounding area. We have to send a message to them that there will be a heavy political price to pay for ramming the third way through in its current form. The time has come for the Tories to jump off Premier Klein's coattails and join the public in saying no way to the third way. The Premier may want to go into retirement with the third way as his legacy. He may want to make this his last political victory. What we as citizens have to do instead is make this his first and most important political defeat. Given the Premier's current tenuous hold on leadership, I'm convinced that we can win the day and defend Medicare. But it's up to people like you to get on the phones, go to talk to your MLAs, and put pressure on our elected officials. As Tommy Douglas famously said, it's never too late to build a better world. And when it comes to health care, I think it's never too late, and it's not too late to save Medicare. Thank you. One other final bit of information. You guys are actually lucky today. There's sort of a long lineup of interesting presentations today. The Parkland Institute has released a book on telling the truth about private health insurance, and they will be in town this evening to release the book in Lethbridge, and the authors will be here to talk about it. And Harvey Vogue from Friends of Medicare and Colleen Fuller, who's one of the co-authors, will be presenting their findings this evening.
Okay, so there's a red light winking at me. It's